Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition, available April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to the On Poly podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
The province of Ontario is back into a state of emergency. And so is the Progressive Conservative Government Caucus. The Tories lost their fifth MPP last week as Premier Doug Ford brought the hammer down on one of his backbenchers. We'll tell you why MPP Roman Baber was voted off the island and bring you up to date on all the COVID-19 developments on this Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. So let's get to it. Sorry, JMM, I'm just getting ready for tomorrow. Big day tomorrow, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, big day tomorrow. I think, well, I won't say another word, but rumor has it Donald Trump is no longer going to be president after tomorrow, and Joe Biden will be.
Let's just not jinx it and move on.
Okay, moving right along. We had thought that the new state of emergency at stay-at-home orders were going to be the most compelling political story of the week. And then on Friday, several things happened all before 9:30 in the morning. Early on, York Centre MPP Roman Baber, who was then a progressive conservative at Queen's Park, well, he released a letter entitled, "The Lockdown is Deadlier Than COVID," and called on the government to end the state of emergency. You might well imagine how well that went over with the Premier's office. Not two. The Premier's office notified the public that Baber was now a former progressive conservative and would henceforth sit as an independent. He has been booted from the government caucus and will not be allowed to run again as a progressive conservative in the next election.
So can I say that I learned something last week?
You can certainly say that. What did you learn?
I did not know what the actual, like, formal mechanism for kicking someone out of caucus was. You and I have seen it happen before. It has happened a few times with this government. And so, I know that it is a thing that happens, but I didn't know what the details were. And it turns out, like so much in government, there's paperwork. In this case, the government House leader, that's Paul Calandra, writes a letter to the Speaker of the House. Again, in this case, that's Ted Arnott, and informs the Speaker that the MPP in question is no longer a member of caucus. When that happens, a bunch of things start to change at Queen's Park, including moving the MPP's desk away from the government benches in the chamber.
May I make an observation at this point?
Absolutely, Steve.
You really are a giant nerd.
You know, our listeners expect this kind of attention to detail, Steve. I'm just giving them what they demand, what
they
deserve.
Well, actually, you go beyond, above and beyond the call of duty. Let's say that, because I want our listeners to know the kinds of efforts that you undertook to confirm all of the information you just put forward, and in particular, the location of Roman Baber's desk on the floor of the legislature, because he's not where he was anymore, right? Where has he gone to now?
So the short version is that he is moving across the floor of the legislature from the backbench of the government side of the house to the opposition or independent side of the house. I want to give people some background here. In our On Poly newsletter this week, which I hope all of our listeners are subscribing to, I was using the phrase crossing the floor to describe what another prior Conservative MPP, Amanda Simard, did back in 2019. She left the PC caucus. And it's one of those phrases, crossing the floor, that, you know, political nerds use, and it describes the sort of changing of the party status. But I was curious whether it was literally true in this case. Our listeners know, I think, that government MPPs sit on one side of the chamber and opposition MPPs sit on the other. But with the current makeup of the legislature, there are more progressive conservative MPPs than there are desks on the government side of the building. So there's some overflow seating. There are some Tory MPPs who actually sit on the opposition side of the house. So with a brief correspondence with the legislative library, I went digging through archived seating plans for the legislature in 2019 to see where Ms. Simard's desk was before she left the PC caucus and where she moved to. And the answer there is Ms. Simard did literally cross the floor. Her desk was moved from one side of the legislature to the other.
I need a word with the producer of this podcast, Katie O'Connor. Katie, are you there? Have you got any Tylenol? My head is... My head is throbbing after all of that. Okay, John Michael, thank you. Thank you for that erudite presentation. I guess we should put on the record here that losing five MPPs in 2.5 years, one to the Liberals and the other four just sitting as independents, that is unusually high. I would say that, you know, as I go through my recollection, it's typical to lose one MPP, maybe two during a government's mandate, but five, ejecting five, that's a lot. And usually it's because the MPP has done something that has brought shame unto himself or herself or the government of the day, and that's why they are being ejected. But four out of the five in this case have been booted because there's fairly significant ideological differences with the government of the day, the Tories in this case. So that's different. Now, let's consider another angle on this story. The NDP have noted one perk this week that Mr. Baber is going to continue to get for at least a little longer. He is the chair of one of the standing committees of the legislature. It's justice policy. That's a title that carries a salary bump over the base salary of an ordinary, average, everyday MPP. So, JMM, care to explain how he's still getting that salary if the premier has kicked him out of caucus?
This is one that did not require correspondence with the legislative library, but this is one of those cases where we distinguish between the government and the legislature. Doug Ford leads the cabinet as premier, and he also leads the PC caucus as his party's leader. So he has control over who's in cabinet and who is in the PC caucus. But the legislature controls its own committees, and which MPPs sit on those committees and who chairs them is something that the legislature votes on as a body, not something that the premier dictates. So as far as the premier's powers go, he can expel an MPP from cabinet or caucus, but only a vote of the legislature can change the makeup of committees. Previously, the legislature voted to make Mr. Baber a committee chair, and the laws of the province of Ontario give him a salary bump to recognize the importance of that work.
So because the legislature made him a committee chair, only a new vote by MPPs in the legislature can take that chairmanship away from him. Have I got that right?
Exactly. And for what it's worth, the New Democrats have been calling on the government to recall the legislature early for weeks now, actually. And they added this today as another reason to do that. I suspect we will not see that yet. But this seems like the kind of thing that Paul Calandra, again, the government House leader, may have a motion ready to go when MPPs do return to the legislature. He may want to rejig the composition of committees at Queen's Park in February.
I don't know whether to be deeply impressed or deeply disturbed at the depths of your knowledge on this. But it's a new year, so let's go with impressed. What the heck? All right, let's get to the new stay-at-home orders, which have been in place for about a week now. John Michael, one of the difficulties in trying to enforce a stay-at-home order is that there really are a lot of loopholes in this. Now, I know politicians are basically saying, stay home. You know, what do we do? Well, if you're in doubt, stay home. But really, it's stay home, except if you have to go grocery shopping, except when you have to go to a doctor's appointment, except if you're a so-called essential employee and you have to go to work, except if you need to exercise, except if you want to walk your dog, except if you want to visit an outdoor skating rink. That's allowed. Except. Now, how tough a chore is it for the government to send home the message to stay home when there really are a great number of exceptions to the rule?
I mean, one sign of how tough it is that really, I think for the first time, certainly in the pandemic and maybe the first time since I've been at Queen's Park, the actual regulation, the government order, the legislative text that they put out for the stay-at-home order was in a lot of ways more clear than the press releases they put out to try and explain it. That gives you a sign of the Attorney General's office, you know, accidentally stumbled on clearer language than the Premier's communications people did.
Stop the presses.
You know, the Premier has been, I think, saying the right words in terms of his public messaging, the tweets that they've put out, what he has said at press conferences, you know, stay home whenever absolutely possible. And if you're asking yourself whether something is truly essential, it probably isn't. That said, when you dig into the details of what is allowed and what's exempted, as you have done here, it gets really murky. And the government, for their part, say this is just the reality of trying to make policy in a large, diverse province like Ontario. People in downtown Toronto might be able to rely on grocery delivery, for example, but 600 kilometers north in Cochrane, Ontario, people are still going to have to go visit stores to get what they need. The government really didn't want to make the kind of blanket order province-wide that could have had some really nasty, unintended consequences. And, you know, we've heard this story before in the pandemic. This is something they have struggled with consistently is, you know, how do you balance the very different local conditions all across this province with the need to make clear, consistent rules to govern people's behavior. It is really difficult, and it is not getting any easier. There is one other thing. Remember I was mentioning the NDP asking for the House to return early, and I didn't think that was necessarily very likely?
I think you just mentioned that a few moments ago, if I recall. You know, I'm getting up there, but I'm not completely senile yet. So, yes, I do remember.
People may remember from the spring the detail of when the government declares a state of emergency, they can renew it once after 14 days, and then after the next 14 days, so 28 days in total, you have to get a vote from the legislature if you want to extend it again. The government declared the state of emergency on January 12th. 28 days from January 12th gets us to Tuesday, February 9th. That is a week before MPPs are scheduled to return. The government might not need to extend this latest state of emergency. They may decide after 28 days that they don't need to anymore. But if they do want to extend it, they might actually have to call MPPs back earlier than planned. I did ask Paul Calandra's office if that was being discussed. And for the record, they said it was too early to make a firm decision.
Huh. Okay. So we'll stay tuned on that. Let's talk evictions, since we've all been ordered to stay at home as much as possible. Obviously, that would be difficult to do if, for whatever reason, you are being evicted from your home. So the province has therefore moved on that. JMM, what's the story?
This was an odd wrinkle in the new state of emergency. When the state of emergency was announced, we were told that the government was going to be pursuing measures to stop residential evictions. And then it took several days for us to get some clarity on what specifically they were doing. They had made this sort of proclamation, but they hadn't shown us what the legal language was. And it turns out that they are using the state of emergency that declared under the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act. They have made an emergency order halting any evictions for exactly the reason you said, that they don't want people being forced out of their home during a stay-at-home order. Some interesting little nerdy details, if I haven't entirely exhausted my nerd quota for the day. This order A is different from the similar order we saw in the spring. In the spring, the government actually went to court in order to get basically an order from the Chief Justice of the Ontario Superior Court. This time they're using their emergency powers. And this order also includes homeowners who, for example, you know, they might have their home seized for lack of payment of a mortgage, that kind of thing. This order prevents that as well. The one sort of caveat in this is that the Landlord-Tenant Board, which adjudicates between tenants and landlords and has the power to order evictions, it is still meeting and it can still make decisions to evict people. It just can't enforce them at the moment. So when the state of emergency ends, when this emergency order expires or is revoked, then evictions will be allowed to continue. And any hearing that is going on now, those evictions will continue to sort of pile up in a backlog.
Now, you know, journalists have this famous expression that they like to look at issues, but they don't want to get too deep in the weeds on things. We love to get deep in the weeds on things, don't we? And you in particular on this podcast edition loved to get very deep in the weeds. We are so deep in the weeds right now, we look up and all we can see are green weeds.
Maybe some ducks flying overhead.
That might be it. Anyway, well done. Good stuff. We always conclude this podcast with our favorite quotes of the week, and we will have those for you immediately. After we ask you to send us your comments on this podcast, you can leave us a rating or shoot us an email at onpolitics@tvo.org. And that's what retired pediatrician Margaret Boland did this last week when she wrote, "I do think that you left family doctors out of the equation as a group who should take some responsibility for the COVID vaccines. Family MDs have the facilities to vaccinate and do this all the time for infants, children, seniors, and all their patients. They know the risks and benefits and can judge the needs of any of the individuals in their practices. Those with underlying conditions, immunosuppression, for example, etc. As a doctor myself, although a specialist, I have always considered family doctors as the foundation for our healthcare system and not the hospitals. Our family MDs can do this and are ready to do this.
Thank you, Dr. Boland, for your email. That's an excellent point. And when the choke point in the vaccination system stops being the sheer number of vaccines we have on hand, I think the government's going to have to consider points exactly like that.
Amen. Here now, my quote of the week, and we have pointed out in the past that the Premier sometimes uses very colorful expressions when trying to get his point across. He's sometimes referred to people who decline to follow COVID protocols as a French fry short of a Happy Meal, or, you know, the cheese has fallen off their crackers or something like that. Here's one from last week that caught some people's attention.
Well, all retail stores and big box stores, and I want to talk again for a second about big box stores. I'm going to come down on them like an 800-pound gorilla. If they aren't following the protocols, they aren't following the guidelines, if they don't have 50% only in the stores, there's going to be consequences for them.
Premier Doug Ford from a news conference last week.
And my quote of the week comes from Toronto's Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Eileen Davila. She was addressing the city's Board of Health, the body that she reports to, about some of the latest measures regarding COVID, the establishment of vaccination clinics and other things. And at the end of her remarks, she took this moment to note that it is almost exactly a year since the first COVID case showed up in Toronto.
But no matter what the challenge, I continue to be impressed by, you know, the professionalism, the dedication, the skill, and the commitment of every single member of the team at Toronto Public Health. So the best I can offer is, you know, a heartfelt thanks to the entire team. Now a year into this response, now with a new aspect, both hopeful in terms of vaccine, but also with much yet to do in front of us.
That's Dr. Eileen Davila, Toronto's Medical Officer of Health, this week.
And that was episode 95 of the On Poly podcast, produced by Katie O'Connor, with editing wizardry from Matthew O'Mara. Our production support coordinators are Nikki Ashworth and Jonathan Halliwell. JMM, as my dad likes to say, stay positive, test negative.
Stay safe, Steve.